Welcome, everyone. My name is Erin Schaefer, and I'm the Graduate Assistant at the Women's Center. I'd like to welcome you to our Spring 2012 Women on Wednesday series, Exploring and Making Visible Women's Intersecting Identities. This semester's series on intersecting identities will explore the rich layers of women's multiple identities and how these intersections shape their lived experiences and perceptions. A few items before we get started, if you could please turn off your cell phones, and also please stay seated until 12:50 as a courtesy to our speakers. Also, if you please fill out the evaluation form, we use your feedback for future programming. Our session today is titled API Women's Activism. Today's presentation makes visible the inspiring activism of Asian American Pacific Islander women here in the St. Cloud, Minnesota. Leadership and activism define the commitment and character of this local chapter of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, NAPOF, one of 12 chapters in the nation. NAPOF is a national organization, the only multi-issue API women's organization in the country. The mission to build a movement to advance social justice and human rights for API women and girls is clearly seen in the efforts of the members of the St. Cloud chapter. Members of NAPOF recently returned from Washington, D.C. after a weekend of lobbying and learning about the efforts and priorities of the national office and other chapters. They will also share with you the direction they will be taking this year at the local level. The setting for this discussion is a local eatery.
Hello, welcome. May I seat you?
Yes, a table for three, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What can I start you off with?
Water will be just fine.
Same here, please.
This is a nice place.
Yeah.
Although there seem to be these big windows. I like the big windows, but I have this feeling we're being watched somehow, but that's okay.
Let's pretend we don't notice that.
All right, okay. You know, you were here in St. Cloud, at St. Cloud State University as a professor when the NAPOF chapter started. But before you came, that's API Women, started gathering at Professor Dia Cha's home way back in 2001. We were a group of Asian American, and Hapa American women.
Yeah, it was Dr. Dia Cha who organized gatherings for Asian American women in St. Cloud and friends from the Twin Cities. She recognized the need for a supportive group for API women who are very much in the minority in this town and isolated from one another. Asian American women needed a space where they didn't have to constantly explain who they were or why they did things in a certain way. They needed a safe space where people could talk about their everyday challenges as well as their successes and be who they are without being judged. Asian Americans are often seen as the model minority, but there is much racism and pressure that API women experience, and there was a need to support one another.
Yes, and in 2006, we became a chapter of the National NAPOF, National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Now, the national organization actually had been in existence since 1996, arising from the 1995 United Nations Fourth World Conference on Women in Beijing, China. API women activists were there, and they were saying, you know, we have come to China to meet, what are we doing in America itself? So when they came back to the United States, this group of 127, I think, API women said, we need to form an organization that will develop leadership as well as address social injustices. So the foundation of NAPOF's work was civil rights, economic justice, educational access, ending violence against women, health issues, and immigrant and refugee rights. And their mission statement, as they developed it, was to build a movement to advance social justice and human rights for API women and girls. And so, you know, as a chapter, this really spoke to us, and it was very natural to become a chapter of a national organization.
But still, the NAPOF St. Cloud chapter is a critical support group, and that is still one of our priorities today. We can't be effective in social justice movements if we burn out from working too hard or lose our balance because of the challenges in our everyday lives. We need a space to take care of ourselves and one another so we can be healthy activists in this long journey towards social justice.
Mm-hmm. So we began meeting monthly. And remember, you were at those first meetings, too. And at one meeting, I invited three high school API young women to come and do Mendi or henna activities. And my daughter, Azania, who was 16 at that time, came with two of her close friends. And they then stayed as members.
Yeah, our chapter was and is very diverse, ethnically as well as in age and class. We are truly pan-Asian. We have members who are of Lao, Vietnamese, Cambodian, Thai, Japanese, Singaporean, Indian, Hmong, Khmer, Korean, and Chinese heritage, and mixed-race Hapa American. Our age also ranges from teens to senior citizen. We have adoptees, immigrants, and those whose families have been here for two or more generations. We have students, college professors, business professionals, business owners, social service workers, healers, and consultants.
Right. So we, as a local chapter, though, of NAPAF, because it's national and we are local, we had the support of the national. And we decided to organize the first ever Asian Women's Conference in St. Cloud. This was March 2007. So remember, you know, the issue on invisibility. Asian women are seen as quiet. We don't talk, but we do. Of course we do. So listen up. Asian and Asian American women and girls want justice. So it was held here at St. Cloud State Campus. Over 200 participants came, including 55 youth, and they were from Apollo High School. And the workshops were youth-led, adult-led, and they related to social justice, human trafficking, youth development. You remember that, right?
Mm-hmm. API women composed the largest segment of persons trafficked into the U.S. The conference sessions discussed the impact of human trafficking on API women in Minnesota, the legal and social issues of human trafficking, and ways in which victims can access support and support services, as well as ways in which API women can become an important force in shaping an inclusive national dialogue about human trafficking. So the important part of it was that the API women, after being human trafficked, they shouldn't stay as victims, but that somehow when they get out of the situation to be empowered. So they have to, the hope is that they will become part of the organizing to stop mm-hmm. this from mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. So it's not like sort of the I'm going to rescue model, but mm-hmm. they take on the initiative.
The empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was also a teen panel for API high school students and other students of color. The panel was called Our Voice and Power to Strive, Stereotypes Facing Asian, Asian American, and Hapa Teenagers, and was presented by our three teen NAPAF members, including Azania. Since this was the first time for the high school students to organize a session, I became their mentor as well as the moderator of the session. The panel did a presentation on the historical overview of Asian American stereotypes and engaged the high school students to think about racism in their everyday lives and how they could challenge them. The teen NAPAF presenters did a wonderful job, and the discussion with the high school students gave us an idea to organize a teen retreat for API young women on issues that are relevant to them.
Right. I know Azania is going to be a little late, but she'll join us soon.
So what is it like to have your daughter as part of the NAPAF chapter? How do you deal with your dual identity as mother and as chapter member, especially now that Azania is chair of the chapter and you as the treasurer?
I also have a role on the national level. I'm the actual co-chair of the National Governing Board. But it's an interesting identity issue. You know, I am about twice the age of most of the NAPAF members. The members are usually around, you know, 30-ish professionals as well as students. And I am in my 60s. I've become sort of a mother figure, an elder. I kind of enjoy that. And interestingly, here in St. Cloud, There are very few women of my age, that's in the 60s, who are activists. I don't know of any, really. And, you know, perhaps patriarchy, perhaps cultural, you know, barriers or cultural values seem to be barriers. I'm not sure. And I think I'm moving towards perhaps being on more of an advisory level, even with the national. I know we're talking about having a national advisory board, especially of founding sisters, and perhaps maybe even moving in the same direction for our chapter. We'll see how it goes. But I've always been an activist, you know, since college, and that was about 40 years ago at the University of Singapore. I began to analyze social and political situations, pretty much as the age of, you know, college students here. But in Singapore, you cannot question authority because you could get imprisoned, and you get imprisoned without trial. You're basically guilty, and you have to prove your innocence, not the other way around. And I certainly questioned authority. I questioned the patriarchal authority of my father and the government, which was patriarchal too. So I basically had to leave the country. And in America, I was drawn to social organizations that fought against social injustice. The anti-nuclear movements, the anti-war movements in New England, in Massachusetts. In southern Illinois, I worked for an organization that fought against the loss of family farms, including black-owned farms. And then here in St. Cloud, the anti-racism movement. So, you know, in our chapter and at the national level, being an older woman, I try to tread a little carefully. I don't want to dominate, but I'm still a leader. You know, I have many rich experiences that I want to share, that I want to teach. So I think taking on more of a listening and mentoring role and encourage leadership as much as possible. And we should ask that question to Azania when she comes. But how about you as a professor? Does that complicate issues sometimes?
Well, contrary to you who've been an activist all your life, for me, being an activist, an API activist, has actually been a struggle. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people assume that I've been an activist all my life, but that's actually not true. So, to be honest, when I first came to St. Cloud as a new professor, I didn't really know or realize that I was going to be a role model for other Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. I still had the graduate student mentality, and I thought naively that my job was simply to teach all those courses. But in a town where there were very few Asian Americans, I was quickly thrust into this leadership position. For example, I was asked to be the advisor for students for a student organization at SESU called Asian Students in Action, which is an activist organization. I was also asked to join and be the member of the St. Cloud chapter of NOPOF without being really emotionally ready or prepared to be an activist. So in the beginning, I really experienced intense struggle between my personality, my nature, which prefers to be quiet and, you know, prefers to be in the background, and then my new responsibility as a role model, which requires me to be more vocal and visible. So I did my job and what was expected of me, but I had a very difficult time with my function as the role model because I felt like I was a fraud. But over the years, anger towards all kinds of social injustice has awakened a voice in me that had been suppressed, a voice that I didn't know that I had. And I've become more vocal and no longer afraid to speak up. And it shouldn't be this way, but honestly, having tenure helps to be vocal. I feel more at peace now that my inner self and the outer shell as professor has finally matched. Being a professor is a lot of responsibility because I cannot be an effective professor or role model in the community if I have not dealt with issues such as internalized racism.
Well, we are both amazing role models. Agree? Yes. And the two very successful teen retreats that the chapter organized are proof of that. Oops. So, I think Azania is going to be coming really soon. And
I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
All right. Hey, you guys.
Hi, it's Inya.
Hi.
How are you?
Long time no see.
Hey, yeah. Mom.
Hi, honey.
So we were talking about you and how.
Oh my God, muffins! I love them.
Oh,
thank you.
Sorry. Gotta let you eat first, right?
Oh, we were talking so much.
Yeah, we were talking about a lot of stuff, and you know, I was just wondering how you. Well, we were wondering like how you feel as a college student with me being a professor, and how you feel as a daughter with your mother being in the local chapter, especially now that you're our chair.
Being a part of the St. Cloud chapter truly has been wonderful. I first joined because we ate at Sawat D, so it was really good food and hanging out with interesting people. From there, my friends Anjali and Tahira had the opportunity to go to California for the National Asian Pacific American Woman's 10th anniversary, and we attended workshops about mail order bride sex selection and strength, and we're in a community of API women, and it was really powerful. And it really awakened us to be more consciously aware, since we were all young and we were not getting this information in high school. That was something that was really prevalent and that we felt like we really needed to share with our community. So from that point, we decided that we needed to structure a teen retreat, which was called Where's My Space? And this was to build community for young API women, and mainly just a support system, so we knew that we were there for one another. We had around 30 participants, and they were from the St. Cloud and Twin Cities area. So this was the first retreat, and from there we ended up planning another one in 2011, and it was called We Are the Ones We Are Waiting For. One of the crucial factors we wanted to implement in these with these young API women was an intimate space where bonding and sisterhood, also focusing on a variety of workshops like Asian American history, self-expression through creative writing, theater of the oppressed, and other activities. So we had around 13 young women, and we were tight.
And we were there too. But back to that question, how does it feel being having a professor and having a mother as part of the group?
Yeah. It was great.
Just great?
It was fabulous.
All right.
It changed my life.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, cool. Now on the national level, our NAPOF chapter, our little chapter, is seen as an amazing role model, did you know that? For other chapters, the other 11 or 12 chapters all around the nation. And they even know us in Washington, D.C. When I was talking to the Chief of Staff of OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is part of the U.S. Department of Labor, she already knew about our advocacy in St. Cloud. On reproductive and economic rights for API nail salon workers. And I'm hoping that we might do a API summit. I have to talk about that with her. But, you know, they know about St. Cloud, and they know about NAPOF. And in D.C., how has it been?
So recently we went to D.C. in January. So we were mainly being coached how to lobby, because of so we spent a week of bonding with one another and basically sharing stories that talked about the Immigration Act and the Safe Cosmetic Act, which is mainly implemented for the API women that do nail salons, since there's a lot of toxic chemicals that affect the reproductive system. So that's really crucial for one of NAPOF's factors. So we were mainly sharing stories and being timed with it and making sure that we were hitting all the main points. And so on our last day, we were able to lobby and we talked to representatives, and mine group, we talked to a representative from California, and they're already on, or the majority of the people that we did talk to were already on base with the issues, so it was mainly for a preview of what NAPAV is trying to do, is mainly trying to focus this year, and hopefully the extended years of doing more policy work, since that creates a really structured change as long as those structures are implemented in the community.
And you missed that, Gilko. You are a professor.
I had a class
to
teach.
You had to work here. My group, because we were divided into a number of groups, we visited with the staffers belonging to Doris Matsui of California and Keith Ellingson of Minnesota. So I used my experiences as having breast cancer and miscarriages to tie in with the experiences that nail salon workers are experiencing in their health issues, because they are constantly exposed, as you said, to toxic cancer-causing chemicals in nail polish. And we ended our sessions with each of the staffers with an ask. We were very clear, we want to ask you to co-sponsor the new Safe Cosmetic Act. So it was awareness building, it was training to lobby, but also that important ask. And if they co-sponsor, that's an act that could regulate the cosmetic corporations. And so you're looking at systemic change for nail industries. So a really systemic approach. Well, Xenia, as your mother, you know you make me very proud. As an API women activist, I am also proud to be part of this awesome organization, and especially proud of our whole chapter. Proud of you too, Yoko, as I've seen us all grow in very positive directions.
It was really exciting to be at the St. Cloud chapter retreat this past weekend. I was very impressed with how the young women were taking on leadership roles, especially the college students. When we started the St. Cloud chapter, we only had 3 young people, but our mission of developing young women's leadership is becoming realized. The purpose of the retreat was to come up with issues to focus on this year, and there were 5 areas that came out of it. Number 1 was to do advocacy policy work, such as the We Belong Together campaign and the Safe Cosmetics Act. Number 2, educating ourselves on API issues and raising political awareness. Number 3, partnering with other social justice and API organizations. Number 4, building sisterhood. And number 5, expanding the chapter. Using my position at the university and connections to other organizations, I hope to help with the partnership and self-education part of our goal. I'm also very excited about our chapter working on the We Belong Together campaign and the Safe Cosmetics Act.
So does anyone know what the We Belong Together campaign is?
Tell me.
Yeah, I was talking to the window, but that's okay.
Oh, talking to the window, okay.
No window? That's unfortunate. The national campaign is about ending anti-immigration legislation on the federal, state, and local levels, and to end anti-immigration climate. This is done through our organization by lifting and making visible the stories and experiences of API women and girls with a reproductive lens in an immigration through the immigration rights movement. This lens supports women and girls to have physical and mental well-beings to achieve economic, social, and political powers and resources to make healthy decisions about their bodies, sexuality, and reproduction. So far, our chapter has done one activity called A Wish of All Families. So right before Christmas, we ended up collecting letters from children just saying that mainly first generation. So they wrote letters to Obama, addressing to Obama, saying that I would really like my family to stay together so we can be together during the holidays because I'm afraid of deportation. And we also had other people that weren't, that may not be very connected to the immigration population, but saying that, you know, I also would like my friends' families to stay together as well. So this was a really
5,000 letters.
Yeah, so we had a total of 5,000 letters. So we're doing other activities as well throughout the year to make change. So a couple of things that are coming up in next month is we have an immigration rally, which is done by, or an immigration rally that's in coming up, and then there's an advocacy day in St. Paul. I don't have the dates, but that's at the Capitol. And we also have monthly meetings, and our next one is on the 23rd. And we also have a spoken word event in April, which is on the 6th. So we're trying to do a lot of variety of things this year. So, yeah.
So we can open the windows now and ask for questions from the audience. But that is our presentation. Questions, lots of questions, please. And direct it to her. Yeah.
How many members currently do you have, and what are your ideas for, one of your goals is to expand the chapter? Just some of your thoughts and ideas about that.
So we have around 15 core members. Right now we have an outreach program, or an outreach group that we have right now, so that's made up of four people. So we're planning on doing mixers and tea parties, which other chapters have also done.
Muffin parties,
which we're doing right now, so you're doing it right now, we're expanding. Okay. So, stuff like this. So last week, like Kyoko said, we had a retreat for just all our members. So this is something that we've been practicing, kind of doing annually, of just connecting with one another and trying to figure out what we want to do for the year. And my favorite part was just being together, because it's really hard for us to get together since half of us are coming from the Twin Cities area and the other half is coming from St. Cloud. And so we try to shared like transportation, but you know, it's a 2-hour drive and traffic is insane, so we only get to see each other once a month. But a lot of other chapters, which is kind of envious for us, is that they're able to do a lot more community building with one another. So transportation is a hard struggle, so it was really nice to be together and talk.
And you know, we will still, I think, remain as a St. Cloud chapter, that words I think we'll continue to use, even though we are expanding to different parts of Minnesota, which is quite amazing. But we perhaps may not have the capacity to become separate chapters, not right now.
Well, what we've been focusing on from the teen retreats is that we've been mainly reflecting on the St. Cloud chapter, or in the St. Cloud community, not the Twin Cities, because there's a lot of other organizations that support the API community, but not in St. Cloud so much. So that's why we're labeled St. Cloud chapter, because we are supporting this marginalized community that really doesn't have a lot of support here.
So. Yeah, and I think the difference between the cities and St. Cloud is that in the cities, not only are there API organizations, but I think they're more connected to one another, whereas one of the things we found out when we were organizing the teen retreat is that there might be some Asian Americans here, but we're so isolated from one another, and there's no connection or communication between the small pockets of people. And so really having an organization that brings us all together, I feel, is really important. Mm-hmm. And as far as the retreat goes, I think every month we would do a call-in, like a phone conversation or meet, but it's usually all about like completing tasks and working, and so the retreat also allowed us to get to know one another better, and that was really important.
But also to do strategic planning for the year, which is critical. Now, Minnesota has about 4.7% of the population are Asian American. In St. Cloud, what is it? It's very tiny, about 3%, less than 3%.
And if you take out the number of students, it'll be lower.
Yeah. And mainly in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, where Asian Americans are. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yes.
Choku, you talked about internalized racism and also the transformation of like discovering the voice that have been kind of suppressed. Are there other members who kind of have similar experience to you? And also, can you expand on what you mean by internalized racism?
So the question is internalized racism, and that is an issue.
Yeah. Oh, you asked what is internalized racism, and then what are some of the internalized racism that I had to overcome, and then did other members go through similar experiences I have? So I think, you know, it's kind of weird that this is coming from a professor, but I mean, I really theoretically knew all these terms, right? You know, racism, internalized racism, institutional racism, all those kind of things. But it's a separate thing when you have to analyze yourself and apply those theories to yourself. So I would be able to articulate all these things that were going on around me, but I never really had the time or took the time to examine how did internalized racism hold me back from the things I wanted to do or I needed to do. And so for me, the internalized racism, the specifics would be, for example, my family, I'm from Texas, we were one of the very few Asian American families in the predominantly white town. And for us to survive, because like for my parents, it was the first time they left Japan, it was the first time being in a foreign country, and they never used English before that. So our survival mechanism in Texas was really to not stand out, you know, and don't cause any trouble. So that's kind of how I grew up, and it's also my nature to not be a vocal or confrontational. But of course, the internalized racism also has an effect with that too. You know, being a petite, youthful-looking Asian American woman, that's what people expected from me. Mm-hmm. And things were fine as long as I played that role. Honestly, everybody thought I was nice, and I'd get the job done, and people would dump everything on me and I'd get it done. But I'm making a public announcement. I don't do that anymore.
All right. You're a hand here. All right.
I mean, I will do what I have to do, but I'm not doing more than I have to do because everybody else has to pick up and, you know, take on their responsibility. And if there's something wrong, I am going to speak up. So there were people who complained that I never spoke up and I never defended them. But now that I'm speaking up, not, you know, some people are not happy with me because I'm not really, you know, I don't necessarily agree with them, but I'm still speaking up. So it does take, you know, I knew what my issue was, but for a quiet person to be vocal, even if you know it in your head, it's hard to do. But for me, it's really the anger that made me overcome that shyness or whatever it was.
Did Napof help?
Well, Napof helped because I didn't have to do this by myself. And there were other sisters. Some were ahead of the journey, and I was kind of trailing behind, but there was no judgment as to when I entered the path on social justice. Like, we were accepted whoever we were, and when we joined, it didn't really matter that I felt like I was accepted. Whereas on other places, I think there was judgment if you weren't doing things in a certain way. For me, Napof really helped me. Like, it did put me in an uncomfortable position, so it wasn't all pleasant. But I mean, everybody has to go through that to find their voice and space. So in that sense, definitely Napof helped. Now, I don't know about other people.
Well, I think there were times that we had a number of women mm-hmm. in our group, and then they just disappeared. And especially some of the older Asian American women, I think activism is a very uncomfortable place to be. I can't identify any others my age. Do you? Do you know any 60-year-old Asian American woman who would be at rallies? Or it's sad, but I mean, they'll be in the cities, you know, but not in St. Cloud, I don't think.
And depending on their status, I mean, if you're an immigrant, I think it's much tougher to speak out compared to if you're a U.S. citizen.
That's true.
or depending on what country you came from or your parents came from, you know, like you said, it would have been dangerous to speak out, so they didn't grow up that way. And even if you are a U.S. citizen, sometimes it's dangerous to speak up. So I can kind of see why. But I, you know, like, just letting you know, when I joined NAPA, like Azania said, I was told that there was really yummy food. So that's how I joined. And then, like, the second meeting, we were already an activist group, and then all the people disappeared, and I was like, okay. So, but I'm still here. Good. And we're still here.
Yeah. What do you think about internalized racism and all that issue? Any thoughts?
I think everyone has that experience, but I think just because, like, with social work or with, like, working with people in general, NAPAF is a safe space for us to have dialogue. And I think something that we talked about with the retreat is, like, having that dialogue and having communication with people that you trust. That's what really helps you grow and, like, helps you create change in a strong way. So.
More questions, please. This is your opportunity to ask anything. Dr. Tripp, ask us a question. Oh, no, wait, there are two Dr. Tripps there. Yes?
In your process of recruiting and building sisterhood, especially for young women who have never experienced any form of activism, how do you appeal this space to them, especially when they have gender roles to perform, to cultural roles, and there's a wide variety of different ethnic groups in which you're trying to push an agenda that encompasses them all, but they have all these other, I guess, more personal type of feminist work that they would like to see for themselves and their community, and especially when you're I guess your culture has never experienced the movement of activism. So how do you appeal to young women, especially like high school students, that this is something that's good for them? It won't, because there's a struggle between being a daughter and, I guess, being, especially in the city, the working daughter and a good student, and then transforming into becoming a good mother and having to fill that role as, how do you keep them in this, I guess, chapter?
I think how we've been facilitating youth programming is by just giving them information, just talking about Asian American history, because you can't force someone to, you know, you need to go wave that flag, yo, and like that's how you create change, but like you can't do that, because that's not gonna do anything. So, like, all we can do is fill their minds with information of this is why you're oppressed, and you know that you're oppressed, you know that you're disadvantaged right now, but we want to give you the resources and the factual history of, well, these are the reasons why you're called these negative words, so you need to be intelligent. So, like, when you are ready to stand up for yourself, you can be really critical about how you're handling those situations. And with working with youth, so I'm a youth studies major, so one thing that they teach us is that when you're working with youth, you need to cater towards them. And that's something that we've been struggling with, because it's really hard to get into the schools and to get into youth program if you're not part of that community, which it's really hard because in St. Cloud, they're really close-knit and there's a lot of invisibility that we're fighting. So something that we've done is doing surveys, and a lot of them have talked about doing stuff on learning about their immigration story. So that's really helped us of structuring. That's what our last retreat we did, is we talked about a lot about the immigration of, like, different flows of the Asian populations coming in and how that influences you, and that's why you're here. So that's really important. So, but it is really hard, because when you're doing youth program, you really have to focus on them. So it's hard to level out all the issues that we as a chapter and want to do, and then what youth want to do as well. But there's a lot of other programs that are unfortunately just in Minneapolis and St. Paul areas. But some of the youth that we were that we did do the retreat with have connected with CAPM, so that's really the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans. So that's really benefited them. So they're a large resource for us. So we support one another. So,
what do you think?
Yeah, I think as an APIA group, we have to be careful to balance what our agenda is and then what the people want. So we don't want to impose our agenda on other people. We have to listen. For example, if we're working with youth, what is important to them, what is relevant for them. So when we want to recruit the young API women, we have to hear their voice first and find out, you know, if this is really a match for them. So that's one thing I think in any social activist group, is that we can't impose our agenda on people. We have to listen to what they want. The other thing is, I mean, I think we are unique in the sense that we are a pan-Asian group. And so being pan-Asian doesn't mean we ignore the differences. We try to take in all the positive aspects of the differences and try to work on a larger issue. So it doesn't mean that we erase the difference. I mean, we know that there are ethnic differences, but we try to talk and find out what the differences are and still find a common goal. There was something I was thinking of, but I forgot.
But the issues piece, so if we work on common issues that are common to all of the groups, then I think we get headway in that.
And if I could add one more thing. I think one of the problems that we have is, like Xenia was saying earlier, we do not grow up learning about Asian American history, and we never hear about Asian American activism. People think that Asian Americans are quiet and submissive because of this, you know, recent model minority myth, which was basically created around the Cold War, so like the 1950s. But that's so strong, and it ignores all kinds of activism that Asian Americans have been involved in since they've been here, you know, in the 1800s. So just even showing those examples, I think, gives people, you know, the idea that, yeah, we've been doing this all along. It's nothing new, you know. It's okay to do it. If we are asked to do something new, it might be a little bit scary. But if we can find out that we've always been doing it, you know, that can be another part of our...
And that's new for people. It's new for students here, you know, let alone high school students who have not been exposed to any Asian American history at all. Hardly. Yes, was there... Yes.
So what you can do is you can take a pamphlet from the table above. We have an email address, so you can be on our mailing list. So when we do have events like Spoken Word, and when there are immigration rallies that are going on in the next couple months, that you can participate in that with that movement. So that's supporting not just the API community, but a lot of, you know, every community as well.
And then we partner with the council. We have the Dragon Festival in Phelan Park in St. Paul. I mean, that brings in 20 over 1,000 people, a lot, and mainly Asian Americans. It's cultural, but we have to talk about what our booth is going to be about, too. But so you will be in the email loop as to what's happening. Also with MRC, in terms of having an Asian Heritage Month in St. Cloud, you know, things like that. Because, yeah, we tend to be invisible.
Yeah, it's really important with our organization is to have allies, because that's what supports us as well. So, I mean, everyone in this room is really key for our development.
Should they just, does that handout have a...
It's above on the table.
Oh, okay.
Feel free to grab it.
Because I haven't
it
seen
has
it.
An it's email everything. Address they can email write to.
Everything.
What's your observation on a mother-daughter relationship? In terms of the chapters, in the terms of NAPOP nationally, we are the only mother-daughter in the whole nation. That's incredible. I do see a change coming up as our, you know, NAPOP members have children, have daughters, have sons, that might change. So it's...
Micey had a question.
I just want to share my experience.
Yes.
Oh, she's a member.
Yeah. Can you hear? Do you want a mic?
Okay.
We won't be able to hear her.
Do you want?
I am a new member of NAPOP, and like when I first joined, I was dragged into the meeting because I didn't know anything about it. And then, when I first joined, we had to do this activity where what do we see as an activist? And then my mind just went blank of like, oh, I know nothing about activists, and I know nothing about women issues and stuff. Because I'm a business major, so I'm all about like the computer stuff. And then I think you just have to like take your time to understanding what's going on around you and accepting the matters, like it's the stuff that like happens around you, and knowing what's going on and adapting to that situation. And like I feel like the pot has really opened a lot of doors for me to see the big view of my community as an API woman. So like I think for high school girls, like they just really have to listen and like if they're willing to change to like be an activist, because I don't know, I would never thought about like being an activist myself until I met these beautiful ladies. Yeah. And that's my experience as a POF member.
And we have another beautiful lady. What is that? Yes, please. Stop crackling. Yeah.
Thanks, Kyoko.
So this is Fiang Tavan. And she is Lao. Kyoko is Japanese.
Wow, I'd like to be put on the spot.
I mean, we are Pan-Asian right here.
Like Hedy says, my name is Piantavan Savadi. I have been a student at St. Cloud State University for a while. You know, I'm on break here and there. When I first joined NAPOF was back in, I believe it was 2006. It was around the time where I was invited to the wonderful food that Dr. Dia Cha and Hedy Tripp, you know, had mentioned earlier in the meeting or discussion panel. And I was drawn to this organization because I've never heard about a group of women, especially Asian women, in the St. Cloud community. And I come from the Twin Cities, and the diversity there is quite tremendously different than the one here in St. Cloud. So as a student at the time, I wanted to learn more about the community, St. Cloud State community, and also, you know, and also embrace my qualities of being an Asian American woman and also an immigrant in the community, and what I can bring into NAPOF. So I found this organization to be very welcoming, very trustworthy, and so far I've gained a lot of knowledge about myself through just looking back at the years that I've been a member of NAPOF. And this past weekend I really had a wonderful time at the chapter retreat over at here in St. Cloud. I learned about trust and being able to open up to my sisters, whom I can talk to in need of any kind of, you know, crisis or anything that I may need in terms of outside related issues. And I know that they're always going to be there, whether it be one phone call away or an email away. I don't know what else to share, but anybody have any questions?
Yeah, we can take last question. One last question? Do we have time for one last question? Or are we done?
No.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, then we're done.
Thank you.